I'm John Krall. Today's No Limits is a treat for your taste buds. We're going to be talking about the Fantastic Food Fest, an extravaganza at the Indiana State Fairgrounds this weekend that will celebrate fine food, breweries, wineries, restaurants, and other endeavors dedicated to the culinary arts. My guests are David King of Indiana Grown, which is presenting the event, Leslie Swathwood, co-producer of the Fantastic Food Fest, and Laurel Gavin, a celebrity chef known as the Butcher Babe. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is nolimitswfyi. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about something fun today. We're going to be talking about food. This weekend marks a new Indianapolis food event, the Fantastic Food Fest. It's sponsored by the Indiana State Department of Agriculture's Indiana Grown Initiative. And it's going to be at the State Fairgrounds. We're going to talk about all of that, but we're going to talk about all things food and all things Hoosier relating to food on the show today. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, my guests are David King, who is with Indiana Grown, Leslie Swathwood, who is co-producer of the Fantastic Food Fest, and Laurel Gavin, who is a celebrity chef known as the Butcher Babe. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here. So let's get this out of the way, since I'm sure this conversation is going to evolve into sort of exercises in making your taste buds go into overdrive at some point when we just talk about food. But we ought to talk about the event first, the Fantastic Food Fest, what it is, how people can attend if they choose to, and what it's supposed to accomplish. I'll tell you what, I'm going to start with Leslie first. Why don't you tell me what Fantastic Food Fest is?
Great. Well, thanks for having us. First Certainly. Of all, Fantastic Food Fest is a two-day culinary extravaganza that we have put together and been working on for the past 3 years. We're super excited to be partnered with Indiana Grown and support all the local producers and purveyors of fine food. And at the event, consumers can see over 200 exhibits of food and food-related products. So anything from dips, sauces, spices, spreads, cheeses, meats, cookware, cutlery, kitchen gadgets, and everything in between. And they have access to a beer, wine, and spirits tasting pavilion, our grand tasting pavilion, where restaurants will be sampling food for ticket purchases. We have cooking classes on site, and we have awesome chef demonstrations from both local chefs, regional, and national chefs. So it's a wonderful event for anybody who is a food lover in central Indiana.
Okay. Dave, tell me about why this is important.
It's very important. Indiana Grown is an all-inclusive statewide initiative that's developed to support, it's developed by the Indiana State Department of Agriculture. The program's mission is to educate our consumers on the importance of buying Indiana-grown products. And it's very important for our producers and growers because, we would love for more people here in Indiana to be buying Indiana products. Right now, only about 10% of the products that our consumers buy in Indiana come from Indiana producers. So it's very important to us.
And how will this, I'll ask either Leslie or Dave, how will the Fantastic Food Fest emphasize, in what ways will it emphasize Indiana-produced products?
Well, I guess the best way that it will emphasize it is until you get something in somebody's mouth and they can taste it, then they may not realize how good some of our Indiana products are. And also, it makes our consumers much more aware of what is here in Indiana, because oftentimes we're not aware of that Indiana does produce all the things that we do produce.
L'Oreal, what are you going to be doing as part of this Fantastic Food Fest?
Well, I have the pleasure of representing Indiana, which I call my second home, besides Louisiana. I'm going to be whipping up something that reminds me of my grandmother, actually. You're going to fall in love. I'm making a spin on apple dumplings. And I'm going to represent Southern Oops with some bourbon and some bacon, because duh.
because I get to light something on fire.
So everyone likes when you light stuff on fire, especially me.
Okay, so you're going to be preparing something special. Do you have a name for this, or is it?
Well, that's a great question. One thing about being a chef, I find that I have such a love for ingredients. Sometimes I don't know what I'm going to make exactly until I go to the grocery store, or in this case, use these beautiful Indiana products that I've loved for years. You know, you usually let the ingredients do the talking, and the recipe, you know, kind of follows. But I have a direction, so.
And I'm sure everyone's, how did you get the name The Butcher Babe?
Well, it's really funny. I'm actually a classically trained chef. I went to a culinary school in Louisville, Kentucky. I've been cooking in restaurants for 10 plus years. Like, it's what I love. And I thought, well, while I'm at it, after mastering pastry and all this, why not learn a lost art like butchery? So I walked into Kincaid's one day. And I was like, hey, guys, I'm a chef. I want to learn how to cut some pork chops. You know, I'm hungry, too.
Yeah.
And they called me, and they've been really flexible with me traveling over, the past 5 years. And, so it just kind of stuck, you know. Who knew?
So was the Butcher Babe, was it something you came up with, or someone stuck on you?
Well, I had always joked that I was the Butcher Babe, being one of the only women that's ever worked at Kincaid's cutting meat. You know, it's kind of a rare entity. But I was on Food Network Star, and I was at Tynesbury Farm, I believe it was, in California. And after I did this little demo, I looked it out in brown and just spilled out of my mouth. And it stuck ever since, you know. So, yeah.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the Fantastic Food Fest, which is an event that's going to be at the Indiana State Fairgrounds this weekend that celebrates Indiana culinary arts. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Well, if there's anything, and we've done shows on this in the past, but if there's anything that's sort of transformed, I think, the discussion about the food we eat and all of that, it has been the whole locally grown farm-to-table movement. I'm going to start with L'Oreal. Is that something that you welcome as a chef, the fact that people make a connection much more between the foods they eat and the place where they eat them?
Well, absolutely. Like, the most amazing dishes start from the source. And I believe that you can taste love in food, honestly, even from the beginning of the ingredients. And heirloom varieties are absolutely amazing. It's just important to get the absolute best, because our bodies are temples, you know. Like, I take food very seriously.
And how has it, changed what you try to do with a Fantastic Food Fest here? I mean, obviously, it's a celebration of not just food in general, but it's specific to Indiana. I'll start with Leslie on that one.
Well, yes, we definitely jumped at the chance to partner with Indiana Grown, because we felt that because that is such a big movement nationwide, not just locally, for consumers to seek out farm-to-table and more locally sourced products and ingredients, what a great way for us to work with so many local producers to get their message and their information and their products in front of local consumers. And, you know, yes, like you said, our event is not, you know, only focused on local people, but that is the primary focus, is to showcase what's available right here at home. And Indiana Grown, I believe, has done a fantastic job in such a relatively short amount of time to not only get their membership going, but to get then opportunities for these local producers to be in the places that where people are shopping, like Marsh and Kroger and Market District, so that you no longer kind of gone are the days where you would only have to order something from somebody's website, or, you know, if you were wanting to buy lettuce, you'd have to go drive to their farm to get it, type of thing. So I believe that that certainly helped shape our event and give us an opportunity to really promote that element of food in central Indiana.
How did you determine who were going to be the presenters here, who was going to be involved?
Well, Ted
Allen, we should go through a list of who is involved here.
Well, Ted Allen was a natural choice as Jason and I were putting this event together, my husband, and we've actually known him for a few years. We know his family, and we felt that he would be a natural choice because he's from here with his previous appearances on Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, and certainly then with all these different chopped versions on Food Network. We felt like he would be a perfect choice for the first event because of the local connection. And gives him a chance to come back and visit mom. But also Hugh Atchison, we just felt with his two James Beard Awards. Ted has won a James Beard Award, too, for Chopped, but and also Emmy Awards. But Hugh, you know, with being a judge on Top Chef, but also his cookbook and Best Chef of the Southeast, he actually has an Indiana tie that most people don't know about. His wife went to IU actually at the same time Jason and I did. So he has a love of Bloomington and central Indiana. So, you know, we felt that was a good balance of somebody who's, you know, really prominent chef-wise, along with somebody like Ted, who's, you know, fabulous journalist and host and has that Indiana connection. And then obviously making the connection with L'Oreal and all the shows she's been on and has such a you know, presence and connection to the local area.
How about those are the big names, but it sounds like there are a lot of people involved. I mean, how did you go about selecting who was going to be involved the other end? Who were some of those folks?
Sure. Well, we through a lot of different connections, we got in touch with various people. But Sabrina Richard, who's the 11-year-old kid chef that was recently on Rachel Ray's Kids Cook-Off, since she's from here, we're fortunate, my husband and I being in the event industry for over 20 years, we know her mom. She's an event planner. So having her come was a natural. And so many people watched that show this past fall. It actually just started re-airing last night on Food Network. So if anybody hasn't seen her, you have an opportunity to do so. But she'll be cooking. And then just, you know, so many of the local chefs, Craig Baker that owns the local Plow and Anchor, as well as his new restaurant, Bent Rail Brewery. He was a natural choice of somebody to present. Tyler Harold, because he's the executive chef for Patachou and all of Martha Hoover's restaurants. Brad Gates, we've known him for years with his catering business and his restaurant that's at City Market. Regina Mihalik. She doesn't usually do these types of events in terms of having a booth or trying to, you know, promote the restaurant in that manner. But she was very interested in doing a cooking demo and a presentation. So, you know, with her, we felt like that was such a wonderful opportunity to get her in front of the local audience with everything she does with Our Bistro and Our To Go. Amy Von Eif is with Cut Above Catering, and she's doing wonderful things and, you know, a lot of opportunities. She does a lot of cooking classes with the public. So we just felt like the kind of the mix of people. And we've known Heather Tallman through some various connections. She has the popular blog Basil Mama. And so we felt like this was a really good combination of people. And then, again, we sprinkled in and mixed in a lot of other wonderful local chefs as well, besides these even.
Dave, what do you hope the Fantastic Food Fest will accomplish? I mean, what do you hope it will do for Indiana Grown?
Right at this point, we're just hoping to gain more visibility. Indiana Grown has been growing at a rapid pace. We have a lot of active members. Also, too, we're finding that the more that the members know each other, the better it is for them to communicate what Indiana Grown has to offer. You know, we right now at this show, we will have about 20% of our membership base. And a lot of our consumers, as I said earlier, just aren't aware of all the products that are produced right here in Indiana. So we're just really excited about the visibility so that our consumers can really meet some of our Indiana producers.
And I should ask, Leslie, if people want to attend, how do they go about doing that?
All the information about our event is on our website, fantasticfoodfest.com. And I assume you guys can probably put a link on WFYI as well.
We can. But if the people are driving around and all of that and they want to know, is there a cost to attend?
Yes, it's $15 for a single-day admission. We also offer a two-day pass for $25. And we have a VIP option for $55 that includes admission both days as well as access to a wonderful host of perks. That's all listed on our website if they're interested in knowing more about
that. Okay, and if it Among those perks would be?
Access to a VIP lounge that has wonderful, comfortable seating, a small jazz band, complimentary beverages and appetizers that are not available elsewhere. We have complimentary coat check, complimentary package check.
Which will be useful in this weather.
Exactly. reserve seating for some of the celebrity chef presentations for those that want to see L'Oreal as well as Ted and Hugh. Mm-hmm. So it just gives them an opportunity to kind of have a home away from home within the show.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the Fantastic Food Fest. It's an extravaganza, the culinary arts. It's going to be taking place at the Indiana State Fairgrounds this weekend. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are David King of Indiana Grown, Leslie Swathwood, who's one of the producers of the festival, and L'Oreal Gavin, who is the butcher babe. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about food today here on No Limits. In anticipation of the Fantastic Food Fest that's being sponsored by the Indiana State Department of Agriculture's Indiana Grown Initiative. My guests are David King, who is with Indiana Grown, Leslie Swathwood, who is co-producer of the Fantastic Food Fest, and L'Oreal Gavin, who is the celebrity chef known as the Butcher Babe. Mm-hmm. So while we're still talking about, we're going to move the conversation fairly quickly into just a love of all things food here. But I want to get some of the particulars for the Food Fest out here. L'Oreal, if they want to come see you do this, you know, apple dumpling bacon bourbon creation that you were talking about, and they come to the Fantastic Food Fest, where should they look for you and when should they look for you?
Well, I'm going to be on one of the main stages, which if you purchase the VIP tickets, that you can get a front row seat because, you know, there's going to be lots of action going on. It's going to be 2:30 at the chef stage.
2:30 at the chef stage. And
yes.
Is that on each day? Or?
On each day, that's
okay,
correct.
Okay, so you're working right there in the middle of the afternoon when people's stomachs will be growling. And what drew you to doing this? I mean, to being part of this?
This festival?
Yeah, this festival.
Well, I celebrate any time that, you know, I can eat, first off. And, like, let alone people that tend to be foodies just like to have fun and relax. Like, you know, if you have good friends and your stomach's full and you're warm, like, you can't really ask for much more. And I love Indiana. I come from a family of farmers, got about 900 acres up north. So I just celebrate all this kind of stuff. I farmed in Maui. Like, I love getting my hands in the dirt, and it's about time people know that Indiana has got a lot of good chefs now, and we've got a lot of good products. We need to celebrate it.
Where did the fascination with food start for you? And not just, I mean, we're all at some level fascinated with food because we have to stay alive.
Yeah.
But you know, you've gone to the part that it's obviously not just the consumption of it, but the production of it. You're all parts of that chain. You can tell are really fascinating.
Absolutely.
For you. Where did that start? When did you realize kind of that this was going to be not just your career, but it sounds like your life?
Well, first and foremost, food is art. Like, I love art. I oil paint. I'm designing a lot of illustrations for a cookbook currently. And basically, I've been doing it ever since I could crawl up on a chair. Like, all the pictures of me when I was little, I was up on a chair, like, with my grandma in the kitchen in the middle of the country, you know, like, cooking with cast irons. And I've never not loved food, like, in a way that I could never get away from it.
What are you, you know, if you can, put into words the kind of satisfaction you get when you are preparing something. What does that feel like from? Is it the anticipation of knowing somebody's going to eat that, or is there actually just a real?
I like removing someone from, like, their bad day or their situation and bringing them to a place where they exhale and they feel like they're home, or their grandma just hugged them, you know? Like, that's what food is all about. People come back to fine dining restaurants to have that experience again. So I like to transcend people's current state of mind, or, you know, like elevate a romantic evening with a date. Like, I create experiences for people, and I love it. Like, they might not ever see me when I'm back in the kitchen, you know, but the look on their face, I'm like, this is awesome.
Is that the best part of being a chef?
That and, like, getting to eat all the awesome food.
Okay.
Yeah.
So those are what's the worst part?
My feet hurt a lot, and I hate dishes.
Okay. So you have that in common with the rest of humanity, I guess.
Yeah. Then, well, right? You know. Yeah.
Okay. Dave, we probably ought to talk a little bit about what Indiana Grown is and how it got started.
Well, as we said earlier, Indiana Grown is a marketing initiative that's sort of driven by the State Department of Agriculture. And, you know, I might say we're just talking about how great the food tastes. I think what Indiana Grown has shown beyond that is just how great the dirt is here in Indiana. You know, we can grow just about anything, and I'm really excited about the opportunities for some of the diversified farming opportunities that are developing here. And there's no real downside to the local movement because the products are grown here. They're produced by our local folks. They're not shipped as far. They're always fresh, and our chefs are doing so many great things with them. So Indiana Grown, our job, I think, more than anything else, is just to make everybody aware of what great-tasting things we can produce in this great dirt that we have here in Indiana, as long and as well as feeding the folks the things that grow in the dirt. So I'm just really excited about the opportunity for Indiana to sort of continue to grow in the production of all agricultural products.
What do you think? I'm going to ask this question of all three of you because it's a bigger picture question. What do you think produced the interest in kind of local food and the whole farm-to-table movement? I mean, I know at least I was a child or whatever, I cannot imagine that my parents would think much about where the food was grown. You know, to some degree. In those days, it was, okay, you know, who really cares where that fish stick is from or whatever. But there is a much greater focus now on food in general, what it is supposed to do for us, and also the chain by which it comes to us. What started that? And, you know, what really kind of fuels that interest now? And I'm trying to ask that not in a judgmental way on one side or the other, because I know people are passionate on both sides of that question. But I've always been curious about why movements like this start and what sustains them. Leslie, I'm going to start with you.
Part of me seems, the marketing side of me, I guess, seems to think that it's, you know, with social media and the internet, and I mean, we have so much more access to information than we ever did. I think, you know, growing up, exactly like you said, I mean, my parents never probably gave much thought to that because, again, it
Chef
was a different,
Boyardee,
it was, it, yeah. there, it wasn't the time. Yeah. You know, my mother went to the grocery store and bought food and came home and cooked it. And it wasn't a thought of that this, if she was making a chicken dish, where did that chicken come from? She just, you know, you may, and there were a lot less options, you know, when I grew up. Mm-hmm. So I'm 43. There wasn't the plethora of, you know, different products and brands and packaged foods and also, you know, fresh foods. So I think all of that perhaps contributes to it, the fact that we consumers today have so much more access to information than ever before, probably in the history of time. So people want to know, they seek out that information, what's in products and where do they come from? And so as a result, I mean, I think Indiana we've been a little slow perhaps to take on the health movement and become a healthier society here locally. But I do think that that probably contributes to why this is more popular today, is because that information is much more readily available and people are starting to realize the benefits of it, that it's certainly better for your body. It's better for the local economy. There's so many different things that go into that.
So is it a product of the fact that you know, there always was this hunger for this kind of information, but there was no way to satisfy that? Or is it just something new that has kind of sprung up? L'Oreal, I'm going to throw that one to you.
Well, in my experience, having my grandmother be a large part of me, you know, being reared up in the middle of nowhere, practically. She came from a family of 13. They were doing what we're doing now.
Okay.
Back then, essentially, but it wasn't celebrated, right? Like, yeah. they had their own farm. They had their own slaughterhouse. They were doing heirloom varieties of everything, and they didn't even know it. It was a way of survival. And so I think in today's society, people are hungry for things of the past. Trends tend to come back around again, you know, like we're so quick paced and, you know, we don't stop sometimes and even call people. It's all text, you know. So I think there's an interest in, you know, investing in things like that as a means of turning back time and reducing stress and ultimately enriching our health.
Dave, I mean, obviously there is an economic interest in it, you know, in terms of local farmers and other producers of food products gain something from this. But I guess what I am always curious about is, again, there really wasn't that sort of pressure, say, you know, and this has exploded pretty much, started maybe 15 years ago, and then, you know, in the past decade, it's literally been like a snowball rolling down a hill. It just keeps getting bigger and bigger.
Right. And being the father of six, I've watched the change in the way that our kids and our younger folks look toward food and how they source food. And but reflecting back to what was just said a few minutes ago, my grandmother just passed away a few years ago at 97, and she lived on a farm. They raised everything. They ate. She drank well water. Very seldom went to town. And, you know, I think the movement has been, as was said, to sort of take a step back and also to realize that we can't look over the economic piece, which I've heard folks say, you know, buy local, you know, what a novel idea, because if we haven't been doing it, we should have been doing it more all along, because there's no, as I said earlier, there's just no downside to it. So I think it's just been sort of a step back in recognizing that, you know, maybe some of the things that we've been overlooking are just right here being grown by us. And also, too, we've been introduced through the Internet to so many different and better and exciting ways to produce food and make things taste better. And I think we're all interested in trying to find better ways and better tasting things to do. We get a little tired of bland mashed potatoes all the time.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about the Fantastic Food Fest. It's a culinary extravaganza that is sponsored by the Indiana State Department of Agriculture's Indiana Grown initiative at the Indiana State Fairgrounds this weekend. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Maybe the other way to, because what I hear, particularly from Dave and L'Oreal, is that it's a step back, a way to what are we stepping back from? I mean, what was it that, you know, we were trying to avoid? Well, I'm going to, since you sort of, do you want it, Dave?
Well, what I would say one of the steps back is the fact that, you know, again, it goes back to, I like to look at it from the economic piece, the fact that we don't like for all our foods to be shipped 1,000 miles before we eat it. You know, we like to have it here. And I think because of Indiana Grown For instance, we have a way to show the consumers something that they can be confident in. When they see the Indiana Grown logo on a product, then they're confident that it came from Indiana. One of the reasons in the past is they didn't have any way to choose that because sometimes our retailers had a totally different definition of what is local. Some may think it's five states, but here with the Indiana Grown logo and brand, the consumers can definitely know that that product's coming from Indiana.
I'm going to ask our chef here, why is it a bad thing for it to have been flown or driven or shipped 1,000 miles before you get to eat it?
Well, there's a lot of hands on that product by the time that it gets to you. A lot of cross-contamination, like could have sat here or there. Plus, then there's labor that's involved in shipping those materials. And are they still going to have the integrity that they did, you know, on the way? God, I've seen tons of things just smashed to bits, you know. I don't know. And I also like to see the person that grew my food and shake their hand and get a relationship with them and find out what they like, and they find out what I like, and we kind of help each other out. I'm not saying freebies. I'm just like, hey, heads up. I've got a bushel of heirloom tomatoes. You like the, you know, purple striped ones. Do you have some fat bat bacon? Like, you want to make a sandwich? You know, like, that's how chefs roll. And, you know, you just got to love each other, and that's what's cool about food. It always brings people together, you know, because sometimes people have been hungry, and hunger is a huge issue. So just share.
Well, and don't foods lose, L'Oreal, don't they lose some of their nutritional value when they get shipped certain foods cross-country?
Absolutely, and they also use, they also can lose their nutritional value when you cook them. So that's something I'm going to discuss, actually. Thank you for bringing that up during my food demo.
So, go ahead, Dave.
Well, and I was also going to say that now, I don't think any of us are saying that shipping is all bad.
Right.
Yeah, because presumably you want people outside of Indiana buying Indiana products, too.
Absolutely. And we don't do a very good job growing pineapples here. So, you know, I didn't want that to be the implication that shipping is always bad, because it certainly isn't.
Right. So in turn, this is a celebration of Indiana, and it is a celebration of food this weekend, right? Leslie, let's assume that you're on the other side of this, this is the first one of these, right?
That's
the first
correct.
What do you hope to accomplish with it? What goals do you have for it, for this first one?
Well, our goal is to have lots of people there enjoying the event, sampling and purchasing lots of different products from our exhibitors. And also for people to then look forward to coming to this event like they do for a lot of other existing consumer events in Central Indiana. We want this to be an annual event that people have on their calendar and they plan to come to every year, because they want to not only reconnect with those that they found that they fall in love with, but also find out about new products, new opportunities, new companies that are doing great things. And, you know, because not everyone can be at our event this weekend. So we hope that, you know, we'll have more people in the future and future years. And that's what we're trying to create, is the longevity, that this will be a longstanding event for Central Indiana.
How many people do you anticipate this weekend coming?
Well, based upon the marketing dollars that we have behind this event, we're expecting 10,000 over the course of the 2 days.
10,000 people?
Yes.
At the state fairgrounds. Now, does the fact that the weather is not, at least right now, is not particularly congenial, is that something here?
When we've looked at the weather forecast, it looks like it's supposed to improve over the next few days, and but still be not the greatest. When you produce consumer events, you're actually looking for not the most beautiful weather. You'd like a little bit, maybe we like to say mildly crummy weather, because that's good for people to come out. They want something to do.
Yeah, you don't want them. You don't want them hiking on the Monon or whatever.
Right.
Instead, you want them coming to your event.
Yes.
And that event is the Fantastic Food Fest. It's sponsored by the Indiana State Department of Agriculture's Indiana Grown Initiative. And it will take place at the state fairgrounds this weekend. If you would like to join our conversation about the Fantastic Food Fest, you can do so by giving us a buzz at 866-476-3881. That's a toll-free call. You also can reach us by email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are David King, who is with the Indiana Grown Initiative, Leslie Swathwood, who is co-producer of the Fantastic Food Fest, and L'Oreal Gavin, who is the celebrity chef known as the Butcher Babe. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about the Fantastic Food Fest. It's a first-time event sponsored by the Indiana State Department of Agriculture's Indiana Grown Initiative at the Indiana State Fairgrounds this weekend. It's going to be a celebration involving restaurants, breweries, wineries, vendors, tastings, cooking classes, and demonstrations on both Saturday and Sunday. My guests are David King, who is with Indiana Grown, Leslie Swathwood, who is co-producer of the Fantastic Food Fest, and L'Oreal Gavin, who is the celebrity chef known as the Butcher Babe. All right, so we're headed toward this event then on Saturday. We know that L'Oreal is doing her demonstrations at 2:30 on the it's on the main stage, right?
Okay,
on the chef stage. What is the other schedule events? If people are are listening to this program and they're thinking, how should I plan my day? You know, if I can't get to all of it, what events would I like to come to, Leslie?
Sure. Well, on Saturday, Ted Allen will be on stage both at 12:30 and then again at 4:30, and on that same chef stage that L'Oreal will be on. And I should just briefly mention that we're super excited, and consumers will be excited to check out that stage because H.H. Gregg and KitchenAid are debuting a new line of appliances that has not been seen before. So they'll definitely want to, if anybody's really into that stuff, they'll want to check that out for sure. And Chateau Kitchens has done an awesome custom display for us with cabinets and countertops. So be sure to check that out. But then on Sunday, Hugh Atchison will be presenting at 12:30 and again at 2:30. And then a whole host of the other local chefs will be presenting on our culinary stage, and that all their times are pretty much every half an hour on the half an hour, both days. So definitely I would, if someone can plan to take out the 2 days to get it all in, that's probably your best bet is to pick up a 2-day pass and come both days so you can see lots of different things and not be rushed. But if you can only pick one day, I would just say, well, are you more of a Ted fan or are you more of a Hugh fan? So pick Saturday or Sunday then, depending on that, and you'll get to see L'Oreal both days.
L'Oreal, are you going to be doing the same thing both days, or are you going to mix it up? So if I were to see you on Saturday, is there no need to see you then on Sunday, or are you going to show us something different on both days?
Well, I get bored easy, so I'm definitely going to show you something different. I'll probably be out at this farm later and fall in love with another fruit. It'll wink at me, and you never know what's going to happen.
You have a really interesting relationship with the physical world, don't you, L'Oreal?
Yes. I'm an artist. I can't help it.
So I've got a question here, and it's one that listener named Shannon has done, and I'm going to mix it up a little bit. My wife is from the East Coast, and occasionally she will go off on a rant about not just Indiana but Midwestern cooking. She says it's like the only seasoning they know is salt and all of that we have a reputation in other parts of the country of being a little bit boring or conventional when it comes to our food choices. Is that a fair assessment? Unfair? I'll ask that first, and then I've got a follow-up. L'Oreal, I'm going to go with you first.
All right. Well, before I relocated to Indiana after college in Louisville, I was under the impression, and it was true for quite some time, that Indianapolis was just chain restaurants. Mm-hmm. And so it was really boring, but that's not really the case anymore. And other than that, I just think of pork, but that's not an issue. I mean, that's delicious, but now there's restaurants like Bluebeard and, Recess. Like, those are mm-hmm. two amazing restaurants, and so we're awesome now.
Is the knock on not just Hoosier but Midwestern cooking a fair one, Leslie?
I think perhaps in the past it's been a fair assessment. I think it's changed significantly. I think no different than people had this perception that Indianapolis was Indy no place, and now it's Indy what a place, right? So we have so much more to offer. And I think that anyone that comes here then is pleasantly surprised that we no longer really are Chaintown USA. Of course, we still do have chains. And let's not forget, there's a place in the market for chains. They employ a lot of people and, you know, pay taxes like everybody else. But, you know, certainly the local restaurant scene has just gotten a lot better. And, you know, especially with the economy coming back, I think that only contributes to it. There's new restaurants opening all the time, whereas there was a short period of time where that's all we heard were restaurants were closing left and right. So this is very refreshing to have so many great options now and new places popping up and new young local chefs that are, you know, coming through the ranks and going out there on their own to open new businesses. So it's a great celebration, too, of entrepreneurship.
So I think it's only fair that we let the guy who is representing Indiana Grown have the last word on this subject.
Well, you know, I can't help but say that before I came here this morning, I was in a meeting and we were talking about what Indiana is good for and in the food area and some of the things that are missing. And in that meeting, we were discussing that, of course, I'm from Kentucky originally, been here quite some time, but when you go across the Ohio River, you sell three times as many pinto beans as you do in Indiana. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I guess what we all are becoming acutely aware of is no matter what state you live in, what part of the country you live in, there's always opportunities to bring some of the products from other places and introduce them here. And that does a lot of positive things. Number one, maybe we need to grow more pinto beans in Indiana. I think that sometimes our trends and what we eat follows what we grow. So, again, that was just unique that we were discussing that this morning just prior to coming here.
We're talking about the Fantastic Food Fest and all things food in general here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Kate, welcome to the program.
Oh, hello.
Hello. What's on your mind?
I just had a question. I wondered if anybody knew about any local cooking classes that people could take, because I've tried to look them up and there really aren't any. I live in Indianapolis in the city and you have to go to Carmel, or there's only one place I could find.
We'll try to get an answer for you. Thanks very much for the call and the question, Kate. Well, L'Oreal, you threw a hand up there, so I'll throw that one your way.
Sure. You want me to go?
Yeah.
Okay. Hi. I actually come to people's homes and do interactive cooking classes. So I don't know if that would be something you would be interested in.
Yeah, she's offline now. But if people are interested in that, how would they go about getting in touch with you?
I need some coffee. Go to thebutcherbabe.com.
Okay.
Thebutcherbabe.com. There's a little form on there where you can inquire about what type of services you would like. And I love teaching, especially like little kids. Like, I've done a couple birthday parties and like I just have as much fun as they do. So
what is involved in one of those classes? If you come to somebody's home, what do you do? I mean, do they ask you to help them prepare a specific dish or show you how to do that, or is it more general principles that you work with them on?
Well, something that's really fun within food is that every event is technically really different and every client is different. You're going to have different needs. All right. So I kind of just have a consultation with them and say, hey, do you want me to take the reins? Do you not know what you want? What are some flavors you like, you don't like, any health restrictions, you know, and then other people know exactly what they want. So it's different every time. It's kind of cool.
And if people are listening and they want to do this, I probably would be remiss if I did not ask the question, how much, would an in-home session generally cost?
Well, that's going to be based off of the time involved, how many people and the type of ingredients that they would like, and then the end resulting quantity. And I tend to source the best ingredients that I possibly can, which a lot of times are local. So it's kind of hard to say, technically.
Okay. Could you give me a range, possibly?
Yeah, if I make you and your friend a tenderloin dinner and I come to your house for two with all the sides, leftovers, dessert, let's say a five-course,
$100. $100 for that? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's, pretty much comparable to going to a pretty nice restaurant.
Yeah.
And not having to leave your home.
Sit in your house. I do your dishes. I make you laugh. You're eating prime. Like, what's the bad? You know, what's bad?
Honestly. Yeah.
Well, and I should also mention that if you're interested in cooking classes, we are offering cooking classes at Fantastic Food Fest.
Okay.
So we have classes on classic knife skills, on knife skills, on classic Italian, American classics. We have some sushi making classes, basic Japanese cooking classes, and we have cooking classes for kids. So those are available. There's 6 different classes each day of Fantastic Food Fest, and you can register for those on our website.
Do you have to reserve spaces ahead of time to go there?
You do, but it's space available. So if somebody wants to wait and kind of see what's available when they come to the show, we'll certainly let people know where we've got some openings. So.
Try to work them in. How did you decide which classes you were going to offer there? Was it more who volunteered or came forward?
A little bit of both, but Jason and I knew we wanted, we're members of the American Culinary Federation, and so
okay.
we talked to some of the chef friends from ACF, and they're going to be the ones teaching the knife skills class. And then Market District is the one doing the American classics, and Amy Von Eif from A Cut Above Catering, she's doing the Italian classes, and Sprouts Cooking School in Carmel is doing the kids' cooking classes, and Katsumi's Teaching Kitchen that's on the west side, she's doing the Japanese cooking classes. So we just kind of felt like it was a nice sort of mix of options and varying interests for people. So we had originally considered having and started to offer a classic sauces class, but got kind of a lot of feedback from that consumers were not very interested in that. So we quickly changed to a different topic. So
it does seem that we've got it does seem that we have got two different kind of dynamics going, because in many ways, even though we do talk about the local food movement and the farm to table thing, at least here in Indianapolis, it has become much more, the world has shrunk quite a bit. There are many more different kinds of cuisine than you would have found here even 20, 25 years ago. How do we reconcile that whole locally produced but, you know, global in nature in terms of your taste? Dave, I'm going to start with you on that one.
Well, again, just yesterday I got a call from a restaurant up in Roanoke that, you know, won't mention the name, but they're a very prominent restaurant. And they have dishes that I guess could go across all the gamuts of food. And their objective right now is to source as many ingredients and parts of all those entrees as they can in Indiana. In fact, their focus of their whole menu is going to be based around Indiana grown. So I think a lot of the things that are happening in Indianapolis, a lot of the chefs are trying to source as many things as they can locally, but certainly there'll be some things that they get other places. But it is nice to see that some of the larger restaurants and some of the well-known restaurants are really working hard toward using more local products to encompass all the range of their entrees.
We've also gotten an email from a listener who says that Trade School Indianapolis offers group cooking classes for bartered items rather than money, and to find it, you can Google Trade School Indianapolis. L'Oreal, you were joking, or...
About what?
Oh, I just thought I heard
I'll
you
change
laugh.
Your oil. You know? Come on.
So let's assume the Fantastic Food Fest is in the rearview mirror here. From each of your perspectives, what's going to make it a success? How will you define success for it? Dave, I'm going to start with you since you're the presenting.
Well, a success is, I think, certainly based on the number of people that attend. We mm-hmm. want to become very visible. I think it's already been a success to a great extent because, you know, we've had over, from an Indiana grown perspective, we've had over 50 of our producers that have signed up and are going to be at the festival displaying and sampling their products. It's hard for me to say what it takes to be successful because, in my opinion, it's already successful.
It's already
successful.
There because it's already elevated the profile of Indiana-grown products.
Absolutely. And you know, but of course we want, before our producers and our chefs can be successful, we need to get it in the consumers' mouths. So we hope for a large turnout, and I think certainly that's going to be part of the measuring stick.
Okay. L'Oreal, what will define success for you with your participation?
Well,
if
I know
people like the apple dumpling bacon bourbon thing that you can tell obviously has lodged itself into my head.
If they're alive, they're going to be thinking about it that night on their couch. Is what I'm saying. They might have one in their pocket. It's already going to be a success. I think of the saying, I am because you are. And it's a fact now that Indianapolis has the type of a clientele that loves food and is supportive of it, you know, and they want to pay the price to support their state. So I'm looking forward to having this like three or four times a year to celebrate the seasons of Indiana.
Leslie's not smiling.
What I'm thinking. I mean, think about it, like fall time, like that would be ridiculous. I mean, tomatoes, oh my God.
Leslie, how about you? What do you think is going to be the determinant of whether this is successful or not?
Well, certainly success for us, obviously, is like David said, you know, the attendance and all the marketing dollars we put behind it, well into six figures. But I think for us, too, it's the relationship with Indiana Grown and our other sponsors and making sure that their goals are met. I think that's one thing that makes us unique as consumer show producers, that we are independent show promoters. We're not some other media outlet or something like that just trying to produce an event. We are very concerned about our exhibitors seeing a return on their investment and making sure that it's worthwhile to them. And so it's our job to make it a conducive environment for that. So our hope is that through the marketing mix, that we've attracted a quality audience that's interested in doing business with our exhibitors and purchasing their products and services. And then also we've come across a whole host of people that are Indiana producers that knew nothing of Indiana Grown. So we've been able to introduce them and say, you need to join and get involved. And so I think, you know, it's made it a really good partnership in that regard. And so for us, as long as that continues, that's certainly considered a success for us.
And real quickly, because we are starting to get a little bit tight on time here, if people want to attend, where do they go to get the information? Where do they go to buy tickets or to reserve spots in some of these cooking classes?
FantasticFoodFest.com is our website. The entire schedule of all the different chef demos, the seminars, the cooking classes, the Grand Tasting Pavilion, which is open from 12 to 3 each day, all of that information is on our website. They can purchase tickets there. And they can also purchase tickets at the door if they want to. If they don't want to wait or they don't want to be in lines, I would advise doing it in advance on our website. And if they have any problems, they can certainly call our office, and we'll be happy to help them out. We'd love as many people as possible.
And the ticket prices are, again, $15 for?
$15 for a one-day ticket, $25 for a two-day ticket, $55 for VIP.
Okay, well, I think that will have to be the last word. I would like to thank all three of you. I'd like to thank my guest, David King, of the Indiana Grown Initiative. That's part of the Indiana State Department of Agriculture's Indiana Grown Initiative. Leslie Swathwood, who's co-producer of the Fantastic Food Fest, and L'Oreal Gavin, who's the celebrity chef known as the Butcher Babe, who's going to be having me thinking about apple dumplings, bacon, and bourbon all week now.
You're welcome.
I'd like to thank all of you for being here. I'd like to also thank our listeners. We will be back on Thursday. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood, and board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.